American cellist Alisa Wallerstein has received so many raves that I don't have time to tell you all of them. So here are just a couple. New York Magazine called her heiress apparent as sovereign of the American cello, and the New York Times described her as a throwback to an earlier age of classical performers. Not content to merely serve as a vessel for the composer's wishes, she inhabits a piece fully and turns it to her own ends. You'll be able to hear the MacArthur Fellow do this very thing on Friday during the inaugural New York Philharmonic Biennial when she premieres Matthias Pinscher's Reflections on Narcissus under the composer's direction. I'm delighted to welcome her here today.
Thank you so much.
And we're listening now to the Elgar Cello Concerto, a recording that you made on Decca.
Right.
Under strange circumstances, right? Because of Daniel Barenboim?
Yes. Well, I had actually known Maestro Barenboim for a couple of years before that. We played, we worked together with the Berlin Philharmonic in 2010. And then it was right around that time that I signed with Decca and we decided to record the Elgar Cello Concerto together.
Well, it's so associated with Jacqueline Dupré's recording. And then you have to find a way, not only working with her husband, but find a way to make it your own.
Well, that's the thing. She was always my favorite cellist. So I probably listened to every recording she ever made, not only the Elgar, but the whole cello repertoire, really, at the time. I probably listened to those recordings every day until I was about 12. And so when I started learning the Elgar myself when I was around 12 years old, I had to force myself to put her recordings away so that I wouldn't copy them.
Well, it just sounds perfect for the cello. There are certain composers who really understood the cello. Elgar, one of them, Bach, one of them, of course.
And Dvorak, actually, who wrote the, probably our titan of cello concertos, which I just recorded also.
So. How did you come to perform it for Daniel Barenboim?
The Elgar. Well, I actually played several different pieces for him before, just sort of purely to get his advice, sort of musical advice. So I played Dvorak for him. I played Haydn, even some Beethoven, and then. But Elgar was actually the piece that I was very afraid to play for him because, for obvious reasons, I mean, Jacqueline Dupré was the
most. And he hadn't conducted it much over the 4 years.
Barely at all, actually, and had not recorded it also since then. And so I actually ran into the conductor who introduced us, Asher Fish, who's a wonderful Israeli conductor who I worked with many times. And then he said, you really ought to play Elgar for Maestro Barenboim. And I said, no way. No way. It's not possible. And but then he said, look, there's no one in the world that knows the piece as well as he does, who knows it as in depth. And so you would learn so much from him. So that's what persuaded me.
And did you learn a lot from him? Because he's not known for mincing words at rehearsal. And I gather you said, if some guy off the street spoke to me that way, the way Barenboim did, I would punch him in his face. Did he ever apologize for being so?
Oh, no. First of all, I spoke to him about this and he said, no, well, this is actually very flattering because you accepted something from me that, sort of especially because he has so much to give and he's such a genius and I learned such an incalculable amount from him. And he just speaks very honestly, very directly. And so, sometimes the truth hurts.
How did you decide to pair the Elgar with Elliott Carter's cello concerto?
This was actually an idea of his. He's been such an advocate of Carter and, of course, of Boulez and so many great composers of our day. And I thought this was a really wonderful idea just to pair two completely opposite worlds. I think, you have Elgar's nostalgia and just generally very tragic mood, and then the Carter, which is very gestural and actually full of this really interesting humor and very sort of completely different worldview.
Did you get to meet Carter before you
joined? I did. In fact, I interviewed him even just about 3 months before the recording came out, and actually 2 months before I recorded it. And this was absolutely wonderful. He was completely lucid and funny and warm and, of course, actually very helpful with preparing the concerto.
Well, you're going to be performing the premiere of Matthias Pinscher's Reflections on Narcissus.
Correct.
Is it challenging or a good thing to, first of all, to introduce a piece, be the first? Because actors often talk about that, the difference between creating a role or following somebody else.
Right.
You know, it's really hard to play Stanley Kowalski in Streetcar, even though Marlon Brando's been dead for so many years.
Right. Well, I think there's a trade-off for both. For both options, let's say. But actually, this is not it's not a world premiere. I've actually played it before. I did the Swiss premiere, but this is the New York premiere. And so, it's a great opportunity, great privilege, I think, because working so directly with a composer and kind of being sort of one of the first vessels is actually very, very exciting thing to me.
Well, you're performing it with the composer at
Correct.
The baton.
Yeah.
Now, that's something that's happened throughout musical history,
yes.
But I've always wondered what it must be like for the soloist to be performing for Mozart or Beethoven or Mahler or Brahms or Rachmaninoff.
Oh, sure. Well, this is an unbelievable thing. But Matthias Pinscher, I think, is one of the really great composers of our day. And so,
how would you describe this work?
It's incredibly dramatic, full of very, very interesting colors and gestures, and very engaging. It's epic in scale, 5 movements. It's about 35 minutes, and so it's really it uses, let's say, every possible instrument you could possibly imagine in the orchestra. Sometimes, sometimes there are as many as 32 different divisions. It's incredibly complex. Textures but that really it kind of comes from absolutely nothing to an almost impossible amount of sound and then just peters out to almost nothing, so it's just it's really fantastic range and variety of colors.
My guest is Elisa Wallerstein, mm-hmm. who'll be performing during the inaugural New York Philharmonic Biennial this Friday at 8 o'clock, the New York premiere, anyway,
right.
of Matthias mm-hmm. Pinscher's Reflections mm-hmm. on Narcissus under the composer's direction. And by the way, if you want to find out about tickets or any other information, go to our show page at WNYC.org. Mm-hmm. How did this experience compare with when you gave the world premiere of Lara Auerbach's 24 Preludes for violin, cello, and piano?
For cello and piano. This was...
Well, there you only have 2 instruments.
Right, just 2 instruments. Well, so that's sort of the most obvious difference. It's it was a very, very intimate experience that I had, and we rehearsed quite a bit together. Every composer works very, very differently. But what Lara and Matthias have in common are they're both very detail oriented, actually. But Lara in particular is extremely specific about what she wants, and would often really make changes sort of on the spot and say, no, try this out. And Matthias gives the performer just a little bit more space, I would say. But they're both very equally valid ways to work.
Well, obviously, you can't do this with some of the other composers whose works you perform. You can't.
Right. You can't ask them questions.
Dvorak or Tchaikovsky or Haydn, for that
Correct.
Matter.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah.
There, I'm sure that really is helpful.
It's
have
very, very
have
helpful.
You ever wondered what it would have been like? To have said to Bach, what did you mean by
I'm
this?
I'm sure all of us musicians wish that we could ask Bach what he meant in
and
particular,
you,
yes. I
and
think.
You do perform a lot of the classical, traditional classical repertoire,
yes.
but
mm-hmm.
then you have made it a point to do a lot of contemporary works as well.
Yeah, I think to understand where we're going, we have to understand where we've come from, which is why I like to pair, even on recital programs, I like to pair new music and the familiar. But it's also, I mean, to develop the repertoire, I think we have an enormous responsibility as performers to promote the music of our day. And Rostropovich is an inspiration for me in that sense.
Do the different repertoires require very different skills?
Yes and no. Of course, it depends on the piece. I mean, now I think we're living in a very interesting time because there are many, many different acceptable styles to write in. Whereas, say, maybe even 50 years ago, there was a serious style to write in, and then if you were sort of neo-romantic, you weren't taken very seriously. But now there's a whole wide spectrum of things to do. So, it's a question of finding what really speaks to you, I think.
Well, can one inform the other?
Oh, absolutely.
Is there a dialogue between various points in musical history?
Oh, for sure. I mean, and there are many composers that sort of draw on different styles and are inspired by different styles. And you might find some composers that are really inspired by, Baroque style of playing. And so this, obviously, Bach playing can really inform this.
The MacArthur Foundation noted especially how you combine technical precision with impassioned musicianship of both traditional and contemporary music and expand the cello repertoire through collaborations with leading composers. How did you respond when you actually learned that you'd won a MacArthur?
Oh, I was completely shocked. I thought I received a couple of emails from them, and I thought they were spam. Honestly.
Where were you?
I was in Israel, actually. I was at the Jerusalem Music Festival, German Music Festival, which is actually run by Daniel Barenboim's wife, the wonderful pianist Elena Bashkirova. And I thought, wow, this is very strange. I also got calls from this very strange number, which I thought it was just a sort of a network problem. And so then I thought, I don't know, I've received calls from the same number for a couple of times. Maybe I should call the guy back, which I did. And it was around midnight Jerusalem time. And so when I said, I apologize if I should know who you are, but I really have no idea. So then when he told me who he was and what it was about, I was just, I think I swore very loudly on the street.
And so, did you use the money to commission a new work?
I'm planning to do so, yes, to commission and to also use it for some educational programming.
Looking over your family history, it sounds pretty inevitable that you would go into music. Your parents are both musicians. Your brother's a musician as well.
My brother's a conductor, yes.
But you're the only cellist.
I'm the only cellist, yeah. And in fact, both for my brother and I, it was a very conscious choice to become a musician. It was not at all presented as this was an inevitable thing. In fact, when I requested a cello, I was around four, and I was very adamant I wanted a cello. My mom said, "No, you're too young.
It's a big instrument.
They make little ones. I played on a 16th size. Actually, it's my first cello. But but my parents they had an amazing combination of being very hands off, but at the same time extremely engaged when we really needed them, and being incredibly supportive, unconditionally supportive. But for my brother, he actually wasn't sure he wanted to be a musician until he was about 16. He was, in fact, sure he was not going to be, and then he did a 180, let's say.
So. Well, one critic wrote, Wallerstein's cello is her id. But you also studied Russian history at Columbia University,
yes.
Even though you had already graduated from the Cleveland Institute of Music. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about Midori. There are probably others. She got a degree in psychology
from NYU.
Mm-hmm. Is it important for musicians today to expand their horizons beyond their musical careers?
Oh, I believe so. Certainly for myself, this was one of the best things I think I ever did. I met so many interesting people, not only professors, but also my peers at the university. My goal was really to read as much and absorb as much knowledge as possible, and to really get to know other fields in depth in a way that I really hadn't been able to before.
You're married to
a conductor. Yes.
So your musical careers must take you in different directions a lot.
Yes, and also in similar directions. In fact, we're spending most of the summer together. We're about to do a tour in New Zealand. I'm playing Prokofiev Symphonia Concertant, and he's, of course, conducting the rest. And
It doesn't get at all tense when the conductor is your husband?
Not so far, no. We work very nicely together, actually.
Yeah. Just one more thing before we go out. Yeah. Are you optimistic about the future popularity of classical music? Because there's much... We've seen pretty much all of the record companies go out of business.
Hmm. A lot of
concerts
them,
don't draw the kinds of crowds that they used to.
The answer is complicated. There are several things actually now that are giving me a lot of hope, which I didn't used to. Programs like El Sistema in Venezuela, that of course now 400,000 children are now playing in orchestras, and Venezuela now has more orchestras than in Austria and Germany combined. And it's just presented as a social program, which is how it's gotten government funding.
You'll be performing an open rehearsal of this piece on Friday?
Yes.
At 9:45 a.m.?
I believe so, yes.
Is that a little nerve-wracking to have an audience hear you while you're going through that?
No, not at all. I think this is a great way. This is a fantastic tradition that the New York Philharmonic has. And I remember it from playing with them many times. I've done maybe even four open rehearsals, I would say, from four or five or something like this. And it's always a fantastic audience. It's a really passionate audience that comes to the open rehearsals.
I didn't get to talk to you about juggling your career and having juvenile diabetes, but is that all working out okay?
It's working out very well, yes.
We're going out with an excerpt from a performance that you did of from Bach's Cello Suite Number 3 right here at WQXR's Cafe. By the way, Listeners can see it through a link on our show page at WNYC.org. And you can also see Alisa Wallerstein at, where is it, Philharmonic on Friday night.
Avery Fisher Hall.
Mm-hmm. Avery Fisher Hall, mm-hmm. And also an open rehearsal at 9:45. Thank you so much for being on our show.
You're so welcome.